You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 30th of December, 2025, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, as I was saying yesterday, we've got a lot of news stories to cover in this usual break that there is between news stories. And yesterday was this rather a huge embarrassment for Keir Starmer, and today I want to talk about some of the actions that the Trump administration has made this week. If we remember, right at the start of the year, J.D. Vance spoke at the Munich National Security Conference and caused NATO leaders and Western leaders to actually burst into tears, where he said that the actual threat does not come from Russia, but the threat comes from within Europe's countries, from those who would seek to destroy democracy by restricting the freedom of speech, which is essential for democracy to function properly. And at the time, I think everybody thought, well, this is wonderful. They've said some really good things here, but now they actually need to put some weight behind it and we need to see some action. So now, 10 months later, I guess, 10, 11 months, almost a year later, we now finally see some action. And we see that the Trump administration has slapped sanctions on various of these censors in Europe. Some of the people that have tried to get the Alternative for Deutschland party banned, they've been sanctioned. To do with Romania, they've been sanctioned. Ones to do with France, they've been sanctioned. And there's one particular one here that is very good friends with Keir Starmer. And he's actually the head of the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And he's at the center of all of this. And the article that I'm taking today comes from Breitbart. And the headline is, Radical Activist NGO Boss at Center of Breitbart Censorship Scandal Denies Being a Censor. The head of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, the CCDH, attempted to claim that his organization is not a censorship outfit, as he faces potential deportation from the United States for involvement in silencing American voices online. Now, unfortunately, but also predictably, an American judge has put a stop to him being deported from America. And that is pretty strong, deporting someone for America for censorship. That is exactly what we want to see the Trump administration doing. Imran Ahmed, a left-wing UK citizen politico turned censorship activist who runs the British Government Tide, CCDH, gave a string of interviews over the weekend following an emergency Christmas ruling by a federal district court judge in New York to block the Trump administration from detaining and deporting him from the United States after he was sanctioned for having led, quote, organized efforts to coerce American platforms to censor, demonetize, and suppress American viewpoints that they oppose. And this doesn't just go on in America, does it? Hope Not Hate do this in Britain. I'd like to see them sanction Hope Not Hate, but perhaps they're not a big enough organization to come to America's awareness. But Hope Not Hate is the British version of this. And this guy here, he's obviously a British citizen. He's not white, but he is a British citizen. And he's the chap at the center of this organization here. And I think at the time during COVID, this Center for Countering Digital Hate really rose to prominence. And I can remember saying, well, the mask is really off here. They've taken the mask off, because what we're talking about is health information And yet the organisation that is calling for the banning of this health information is supposedly a centre for countering digital hate. How can medical information be described as hate, which is supposed to be insulting, abusive or threatening language, supposedly about minorities? And the fact that this same organisation were trying to use the same laws to ban medical information from being shared just proves that it's got nothing to do with protecting minorities and everything to do with censoring information that the government doesn't want the public to hear. Why else would they be using these same organisations to go after medical information? And I'm sure that they would like to expand it even further. That's what this legal but harmful definition is about. Any information that the government decides is completely legal for people to hear, but they decide that it could be harmful for people to hear, harmful to the social cohesion or harmful to anything that they can dream up, really, they could then tell the American companies that they have to censor it. That's what the Online Digital Safety Act is about. It's not about protecting children from pornography, which was the excuse that they actually used. Getting back to the article here, the former Labour Party advisor, so he's very highly connected, who resides in the United States on a green card, has accused the Trump administration of violating his constitutional rights, in particular First Amendment protections, by seeking to remove him from the country over his activist work, which has included efforts to force social media and search companies to blacklist conservative news outlets such as Breitbart News. Well, it's popcorn on the kettle black here, isn't it, for him to say that his constitutional rights are being violated when that's exactly what he was seeking to do for everybody else. He was seeking to remove the right to free speech. He was seeking to prevent the constitutional right to free speech from applying to internet social media platforms. That's what needs to be done. The right to free speech needs to be implemented in all of these platforms so that democracy can actually work. Not take that away from these platforms and censor people's views that the government don't like. In an interview with PBS, Ahmed also asserted that the Center for Countering Digital Hate was not involved in censorship, saying we are a non-profit and we can't therefore be censoring things, which is, of course, something that the government does. But it doesn't matter if they're non-profit. They're the people that the Biden administration was going to for them to tell the Biden administration who to censor. And it's the same in Britain with Hope Not Hate. Hope Not Hate go to the politicians and they tell the politicians who it is that they need to be censoring and who it is that they think are inciting hate. And of course, it's always people that are opposed to the government. So it works to shut down dissidents. That's the way that this goes. We have pretend dissidents, which are the people on the left, which in actual fact aren't really dissidents because they support the government in all of its main policies, such as LGBTQ policy, immigration policy, feminism, all of these really hot topics the left support the government on. So how can they claim to be dissidents when they turn up to protest against the real dissidents who are opposed to these government policies? And to say that he's a charity, therefore he can't be censoring, that's ridiculous. That's got nothing to do with it. A charity can still be involved in censorship. It depends on what the information that they put out. And if they're saying this person here needs to be banned because what he is saying is hateful and what a person is saying is actually completely legal, but the government then listens to the Center for Countering Hate, and quite clearly this Center for Countering Hate has been involved in censorship. They're directly involved in it. They're the ones that pick out the people that the government then go on to censor, or they pick out the people that the social media companies then go on to censor. That's what Hope Not Hate do. They will tell YouTube, the people that YouTube should be censoring. They were telling BitChute, the people that BitChute should be censoring when BitChute was working in Britain, and BitChute had to do that. They have to do this because they have to show that they are working to prevent the law being broken, in incitement to hate, effectively. But that isn't what these charities flag up to the government. They don't flag up stuff that breaks the law. They flag up stuff that is critical of the government. They're always flagging up Mark Collette, but Mark Collette doesn't actually break the law. What he does is he criticizes government policy, and he does it in a way that is not insulting, abusive, or threatening, and yet hope not hate cover him all the time. This Center for Countering Digital Hate, they are similar. However, documents obtained last year by America First Legal found that members of the CCDH were in regular contact with White House officials in the Biden administration, which reportedly used its findings to weaponize the vast counter-terrorism apparatus of the United States government to silence people during the coronavirus crisis. So there you have it. This organization that is supposed to be for countering digital hate was actually being used to silence people that were sharing medical information. I can't stress how important that is, because it shows you that these hate speech laws, they're not there to protect minorities. They're there to silence critics of the government. Internal CCDH documents showed the body had set itself the task of wielding British and European Union internet control laws and to, quote, destroy Musk's Twitter. So they are opposed to anything that allows free speech, essentially. The House Judiciary Committee found in 2023 that the Biden administration had repeatedly relied on the CCDH's infamous Disinformation Dozen report to pressure social media firms to censor Americans, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who the CCDH maligned as anti-vaxxers, responsible for almost two-thirds of anti-vaccine content circulating on social media platforms. Well, how the times do change, don't they? The very person that was supposedly responsible for two-thirds of anti-vax information is now the Health Secretary of the United States. And this is why they want to get rid of this information. They don't want people to know that these people are out there that think the same way as they do. And this just shows you why it's essential to have free speech for democracy, because clearly when the people learn about what Robert F. Kennedy is saying and what he was saying, clearly they wanted him to take part in the government, because he is now taking part in the government. And if this censorship had succeeded, people would never have known what Bobby Kennedy, or Robert F. Kennedy rather, was actually talking about. That's why it's essential that you have free speech for a functioning democracy. Otherwise, you're going to get people in power that shouldn't be there, that are only there because they censored the point of view that was being talked about by their opponents. And the fact that this, as I say, this was medical information, and yet that was also being covered under this Center for Countering Digital Hate, it reminds me also of the UN Migration Pact from a few years back. And in the UN Migration Pact, all the countries that signed up to it agreed that they would implement a change to their hate speech laws where migration status would also be considered a protected characteristic. So what they're effectively saying there is that criticism of immigration in itself is hate speech. So not actual criticism based on race, but just criticism of government policy. So they sort of admitted there that it wasn't actually about protecting minorities. It was about preventing criticism of government policy on immigration. But by having this company involved, they've gone one step further and said, well, it's any information that we don't want the public to know about, we're going to call that hate. And now they've expanded on that, and they refer to it as disinformation. Even if it's true, even if it's factual, they'll say that it's disinformation if you have come to different conclusions than they have about the facts. I mean, one instance of that could be, for instance, the David Lammy report, which I often bring up, which looked at inequalities between ethnic groups within Britain and showed that black people are in jail for violent crimes at about five times their percentage of the population. And of course, David Lammy's conclusion from that was that there was racism that was to blame for this discrepancy. Whereas my conclusion would be, well, it's just like men commit more crimes than women, and we don't complain about that. And what we have here is statistics that show that black people commit more violent crimes than white people. And that's just because they're a different ethnic group. They have different characteristics to other ethnic groups. One of those characteristics being measurable statistics, and one of those measurable statistics being the rate that they're incarcerated for violent crime. So they would say that I was pushing disinformation by saying that, but I'm using exactly the same facts that the government uses when they claim that racism is to blame. So you can have a difference over the conclusion of what the facts actually state. That's why it's important that you do actually look at the facts. You don't just take the conclusion of the government. And the established facts basically study scientific studies or facts that have been established in courts. And even the facts that are established in courts might actually be in error, but they're still an established fact, which is people might not actually be aware of. Even if you can show it's in error, it's still an established fact, so you have to go along with that. In my court, when I was at trial, one of the things they said in court was that Richard Edmonds, the famous veteran nationalist activist, was an MP in Parliament for the National Front. And of course, the National Front never had any MPs in Parliament, but their information was taken from Wikipedia. Someone had obviously been having a bit of a joke on Wikipedia and had put that Richard Edmonds was an MP in Parliament. And that actually got repeated in court. And that was written into the stenograph, the court's proceedings. So that would have been an established fact in court. But of course, that's an established fact that is in error. Anyway, we've gone a little bit off topic here. Ahmed attempted to cast his organization's efforts as merely providing accountability to large social media companies, which he described in a separate interview with the left-wing British Guardian newspaper as displaying arrogance, indifference, and a lack of humility and sociopathic greed at the expense of people. So he sees it as he's just actually holding them accountable for what's being said. But they're not accountable for what's being said if you have free speech. They're a platform. They're not a publishing house. Someone would be accountable for it if they were publishing this information, but they're not. They're a platform. It's like claiming that the British Telecom are accountable for what's being said on their telephones. They're not accountable for what people say on their telephones. Individuals are accountable for that. So he's entirely in the wrong here by saying that he's just making these social media companies accountable, because they're not accountable. How can they be accountable for what people say to one another in their conversations? Like others sanctioned by the US government in this week's announcement, Ahmed attempted to claim that the State Department bid to end censorship was in fact an act of censorship. And rather than himself having been exposed as a mendacious hypocrite, it is actually his opponents who deserve the label. If he hadn't been going out there trying to get social media companies to remove posts from people, then he wouldn't have been sanctioned in the first place, though, would he? It's not people on the right that try to restrict the information that is available. You don't never hear of people on the right writing to Twitter or forming a charity in order to get people that left-wing people that are our political opponents to get them removed and ban their tweets and ban their social messaging. You don't see us trying to get them kicked out from their employment or banned from using the use of banks or kicked out from where they live. This is all something that goes on the left. It's just their mentality. They seem to think that there are no civilizational norms when you have a political opponent, and that it's perfectly acceptable to like do whatever you like to disable your opponent in some way, up to and including violence. And it's only people on the left who think that way. He suggested that the reason why the Trump administration was targeting groups such as his was from pressure from tech bosses, saying we've seen that social media and AI companies are increasingly under pressure as a result of organizations like mine. No one likes being exposed as mendacious or hypocritical, but they call their friends in government or they call their pitbull litigation lawyers and start suing. I mean, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? That's exactly what these left-wing groups do. They put pressure on the social media companies to remove tweets. They call their friends in government. That's what was done to me, wasn't it? Hope Not Hate called their friends in government so that their friends in government could request the police investigate Radio Aryan when I was working on Radio Aryan. And they even showed all this in a BBC documentary, which is no longer available. But that's what happened. The Hope Not Hate went to the BBC, or the BBC went to Hope Not Hate, and one of the two then went to the MP for Cardiff and said to him, what are you going to do about this? We've got all this evidence on this evil neo-Nazi racist. And it was the Cardiff MP that then called for the police to investigate my radio project. So exactly what's going on there. They called their friends in government in order to remove content that they don't like, because it's content that provides an alternative view to their own. The issue of whether the White House's efforts to remove Ahmed from the country will come before a court again on Monday. While the British national has expressed confidence that his residency in the United States will be upheld, the State Department said on Thursday, the Supreme Court and Congress have repeatedly made clear the United States is under no obligation to allow foreign aliens to come to our country or reside here. That very well may be true, but as we've seen from the past, these American judges, they get in there and they stop these deportation orders. So this is good news that this is setting the cat among the pigeons here, and it really has. I mean, all the European leaders have been up in arms about this, talking about how they support free speech, and of course they don't support free speech. Every European country has got thousands of people in jail for things that they said on social media posts. I've got another article here to do with it. Labour fully committed to upholding free speech after US bans Keir Starmer-linked NGO boss in censorship row. So this is what Labour say. They support free speech, but their actions show that they don't support free speech. Their actions show that they want to see people locked up who disagree with them. The UK government said it is fully committed to upholding the right to free speech after the head of a campaign group aimed at preventing the spread of online hate and disinformation was barred from entering the United States. Chief executive of the CCDH, Imran Ahmed, who is from Manchester and has links to senior Labour figures, is one of five Europeans sanctioned by the US. A UK government spokesman said the UK is fully committed to upholding the right to free speech. And I guess what they mean by free speech there is only the speech that they think should be allowed. I mean, nobody thinks you should be allowed to incite violence against people. But to say that you're not allowed to say anything insulting or abusive or threatening even, which can include just abbreviating the word Pakistani, for instance, and then saying that needs to be restricted, the right to actually express yourself in those terms needs to be restricted. I think most people would say, well, that's insane. That is restriction on free speech. That is exactly what a restriction on free speech is. The UK government continued, while every country has the right to set its own visa rules, we support the laws and institutions which are working to keep the internet free from the most harmful content. See, not illegal content, but what the British government seems to think is harmful content, which is literally an opposing view to their own, a different opinion to their own. Social media platforms should not be used to disseminate child sex abuse material. See, straight away they deflect it and pretend that this is somehow to do with child abuse or protecting children, which it isn't. They say social media platforms should not be used to disseminate child sex abuse material, incite hatred and violence, or spread false information and videos for that purpose. Well, how about they just have it that social media platforms should not be used to say illegal things? But they won't say that, you see, because what they mean by inciting hatred is simply making jokes, they can say, is inciting hatred. It's any opinion that is different to their own. Elon Musk has previously declared war on the CCDH, describing it as a criminal organisation. And that's because they're blackmailing the social media companies. And we know that the ADL do that as well. They blackmail them. They threaten that if they don't come to heel and start removing the posts that they want to be removed, then they'll start campaigns against the advertisers so that the advertisers all pull out. They'll write to the banks that fund these organisations. I mean, even Donald Trump got debanked some years back when he was on his campaign trail. I think it might have been in 2020. And after that, after January the 7th, the bank that was allowing people to send donations to the Trump electioneering campaign, they pulled out and they debanked him. And yet what Trump was saying on Twitter was, don't do anything violent, walk up peacefully to the White House. And then when he heard that the people were all in the up at the Capitol, when he heard that everybody was at the Capitol, he said, now it's time to peacefully go home. And yet they banned him and claimed that he needed to be banned. The president of the United States needed to be banned. I mean, there is censorship that goes on, massive censorship. And if opposition forces would like to see America start carrying out this censorship, and they wanted to force the tech media companies to force this censorship. And it's only because Donald Trump has got in office that has been removed. I mean, people do seem to have fairly short memories. If you think back to a year ago or 2 years ago, before Elon Musk took over Twitter, it was just a completely different landscape. Everybody that had a right-wing view had moved over to Gab. Now, finally, you do get a plurality of views on Twitter. You don't have everybody on there, which is a great shame. They should give Mark Collette and Laura Towler and Sam Melia, they should all get their Twitter accounts back. But it is better than it was. And I don't think people could have even imagined that would happen at the time. Mr. Ahmed replied by telling The Guardian they were going to continue their work tirelessly. US Secretary of State Marco Rubio accused five Europeans of leading efforts to coerce American platforms to punish American viewpoints that they oppose. Thierry Breton, the former European Union Commissioner who oversaw digital affairs, and two leaders of German organisation Hate Aid, Josephine Ballon and Anna Lavina von Hodenberg, were also barred from entering the country. That's brilliant. Thierry Breton, he was the architect who developed this Digital Services Act, and he was the one that was writing to Elon Musk, threatening Elon Musk that he needed to come to heel and obey European speech laws. Why should America have to obey European speech laws? America should be protecting the right to free speech, which is so, as I say, it's so essential to democracy. Claire Melford, a British-based executive who runs the Global Disinformation Index, completes the list. Where do the Global Disinformation Index, where do they get the information from as to what is information and what is disinformation? And I bet you that the BBC are high up on that list as the people that tell them whether something is disinformation. And yet this year we discovered the BBC were the kings of disinformation by doctoring a Donald Trump speech to make him say the opposite of what he actually said. And I'm very glad that Trump is suing the BBC about this. And over here in Britain, they keep saying, oh, yes, well, Florida's laws don't apply in Britain. Well, if Florida's laws don't apply in Britain, then Britain's laws do not apply in America either, do they? And none of the tech companies need to obey the European speech codes, do they? You can't have it both ways. Either America's laws apply in Britain or they don't. The names were revealed by Sarah Rogers, the Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy, after Mr. Rubio declined to give them. Instead, he described them as radical activists and weaponized non-governmental organizations who had violated a visa policy introduced in May targeting foreigners responsible for censoring protected speech in America. For far too long, ideologues in Europe have led organized efforts to coerce American platforms to punish American viewpoints that they oppose, Mr. Rubio said. The Trump administration will no longer tolerate these egregious acts of extraterritorial censorship. The move forms part of a broader administration effort to combat foreign influence over online discourse, deploying immigration law as its primary tool rather than platform regulations or sanctions. And yes, I know it is hypocritical them talking about combating foreign influence when Israel clearly has probably more influence over America than America itself has influence over America. Mr. Rogers said none of those sanctioned is a current UK or EU official. However, we know that foreign government officials are actively targeting the United States. This week, the UK's Liberal Democrats claim President Trump's national security strategy amounts to foreign interference by a hostile foreign state because it correctly identifies mass migration and decaying national sovereignty as existential European security concerns. It is existential mass migration. And the free speech issue is, it's not existential, but it is essential for a functioning democracy. The Liberal Democrats had accused the US administration of using bullying tactics, with Foreign Affairs spokesman Callum Miller adding that President Donald Trump likes to dish it out, but not to take criticism. Well, it's not about stopping people criticizing the government, is it? These censorship organizations, that's what they were doing. They were going after people that criticize the government, and they still are doing that. We have thousands of people in jail for criticizing the government because the words they use when being critical, the government decided they're not allowed to use those words effectively. These sanctions are an attack on free speech and amount to bullying tactics. The government must stand up for its citizens and not stay silent, he said. So that's the Liberal Democrats. They think it's an attack on free speech to put sanctions on organizations that seek to censor people's speech. French President Emmanuel Macron also condemned the sanctions, accusing the US of intimidation and coercion aimed at undermining European digital sovereignty. Well, Europe's trying to undermine American digital sovereignty. Why don't we allow the people to vote? Why don't we allow the people to vote and see whether they will use these American platforms that uphold free speech, or whether they'll move to some European one that doesn't? That's what they should do, isn't it? They should set up a European social media company that obeys all the European speech laws, and then we can see how that fares against the American one that actually allows free speech. And I think I know what the results of that would be. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.